Stocks soar to record highs on Monday on this holiday shortened week. And not just stocks, crypto as well. Plus, what I'm calling the over-the-rainbow trade heats up. Cruise lines, theaters, and more to talk about there. Plus, what does China have in mind when it comes to Alibaba? We will talk about that as well. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Emily McCormick and Jared Blickery. So Jared, not to sound like a broken record here, but all of the indices, the major indices, hitting records on Monday, and crypto as well. What does that say to you?
Well, I think this is a Groundhog's Day that we could live with this week as we enjoy the, now we're going on the third day of the Santa Claus rally, officially goes from last Thursday into next Tuesday. That's five last trading days, plus two first trading days of the new year. And this comes on the back of a Groundhog Day that we are gladly not going to have to talk about, hopefully, in the near future. And that's the stimulus. $900 billion passed as part of the $2.3 trillion appropriations bill by Trump on Sunday evening. And, you know, you can get into some of the technical details of that and how the late signing has possibly disrupted payments for people by maybe a week or 2 weeks because a lot of the provisions lapsed. Some of the unemployment benefits, at least for New York City residents, ended on Sunday evening. Nevertheless, we have a really decent market set up. We're just kind of drifting higher, not a lot of intraday action, but you look at the tape yesterday, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook each up more than 3.5%. Different reason why for each of them, but the big guys are back participating. And to the downside, we saw a lot of weakness in the lockdown trade. So that's Zoom, that was off 6%, Peloton off about 5 or 6% as well, plus a lot of those software companies like Okta and DocuSign. So all in all, a decent market set up here. And you mentioned cryptocurrency. Bitcoin surged to north of 28,000. In fact, I think it was $28,288 on Yahoo Finance data. But, you know, it took the Dow about a year and 10 months. I went back and I looked to surge past 20,000 and then hit the same equivalent Dow level, which is about 28,288. That took a year and 10 months. Bitcoin managed to do this in less than 2 weeks. So, and we could hit 30,000 this week. So it just kind of tells you the momentum that is in the crypto space. Aside from XRP, got its own problems, looking pretty bullish there too.
Yeah, Jared, and definitely a lot of optimism that we have seen in the stock market yesterday. And it is on one hand a bit surprising to see that just coming in the wake of that stimulus deal, since it had largely been expected to eventually get passed. But yet again, as you were discussing, we are in the midst of this Santa Claus rally period, and that is a period at the end of the year and then into the first two sessions of the new year that has been higher nearly 78% of the time going back to 1950. And that's according to some data from LPL Financial. So with all of this in mind, though, I think it's also interesting to see what new economic outlooks have been in the wake of the passage of this stimulus package, because we actually saw Goldman Sachs economists upgrade their first quarter GDP growth forecast to 5% annualized following the fiscal deal passage. And that's up from a 3% growth rate that they had seen previously. So a pretty significant upgrade here on the heels of this stimulus package getting passed through Congress and now through President Donald Trump as well. And they baked into their forecast prior a $700 billion package. So again, this actually coming in higher than some economists had been looking for here. There are a number of provisions, of course, that are going to be very important in order to stimulate economic growth. We have that $319 billion for small businesses, including $284 billion through the Paycheck Protection Program. We have $25 billion in rental assistance, the extension of the eviction moratorium, and billions of dollars for vaccine distribution and COVID-19 testing. And not to mention those $600 direct checks to many Americans, some of which will certainly go to necessities uncertainties, but also what might end up stimulating some more of this discretionary spending on goods. And that, I think, is what has many economists, again, a bit more upbeat when it comes to economic activity, especially when it comes to the consumer side of the equation. So definitely great to see that we now have that $900 billion package through. Some are saying that we may get even more once we have President-elect Joe Biden actually inaugurated and the new essentially Congress, whatever emerges after the Georgia runoffs. But that will be something to watch in the first month of the year.
I love it how you guys talk about this Santa Claus rally. I really do, because I was waiting. I'll be honest with you. I was waiting to tell you guys, see, it didn't happen this year, but it happened this year. It happens every year. I don't get it, because that's not how the market's supposed to work. In other words, when there's an anomaly like that, people trade against it and eventually it becomes mitigated. But lo and behold, every year, like clockwork, Jared Blickery calls for it. Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Emily, too, she's a believer as well. So, you know, it's interesting. A lot of other things going on here that sort of mentioned. I mean, the S&P is on track now to be up, what, 15% this year. I mean, can you imagine? What a crazy year, right? Volatility, the VIX has been, you know, of course, high. It's a little bit less over the past couple sessions now. But that has been a huge boon to Wall Street. Let's not forget that. And stocks are expensive. Let's not forget that. That's another point that I think we should make here. The forward PE for the S&P is about 22.2. That's 22.2 times, which is well above the long-term average of 15.3. But, you know, when you get an environment like this, the setup, as you guys like to call it, people say, well, of course, yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about it, because, you know, we're going to recover in 2021. And in fact, that's really the whole thesis, isn't it? That, of course, things aren't great right now, but you better get yourself set for 2021, because 2021 is the year we're going to come back. And 2021 is the year the economy is going to open up. And it may not be Q1, it may not be Q2 anymore, but Q3 and Q4. Although now we're starting to see people talk about 2022. As well. And that kind of brings us to our next topic. In fact, it does squarely, which is what I was saying in the intro, the over the rainbow trades, which are buying things now that will pay off later, which is basically what investing really is, of course. But in this instance, we're talking specifically about when the pandemic is over. And the 2022 piece is theaters, and we'll get to that a little bit as well. But Emily, I think you wanted to start off with a deal that JP Morgan announced yesterday.
That's right, Andy. And it's an interesting one. I mean, JP Morgan agreeing yesterday to take up the technology platform, the travel agency, the gift card and rewards businesses of CX Loyalty Group. Now, that may or may not be a household name to you, but it's a closely held company in Connecticut. And this is really a bet here from JP Morgan Chase on the return of leisure travel. And what we've heard time and time again from a number of strategists is that once travel starts to come back on a global basis, well, first off, once travel comes back, it's first going to be mostly domestically, and then it's going to really be globally. And then in terms of leisure versus business, it's going to be that leisure component that really comes back first on travel, because at this point, we have people who are used to working from home. We have businesses that are more amenable to allowing more of their employees to do so. And so what JP Morgan is really doing is that they're saying that in the coming years, they anticipate that they will actually get a return from rewards programs that actually are tethered to people traveling for pleasure as opposed to business, or as opposed to, of course, staying from home and taking part in things virtually. And I think, too, what's interesting about this deal is that it's something that likely isn't going to pay off in the very near term, maybe the next 6 months or so. But when you look at the horizon of the next couple of years, this is something that we really could see actually be quite lucrative, not only for JP Morgan, but if you think about it, companies also want to get in on deals when things are down, you know, buy low, sell high. And that's exactly what JP Morgan Chase is likely doing. Now, that said, terms of this deal were not disclosed. We don't know exactly how much JP Morgan paid for these components of CX Loyalty Group's businesses. But at the same time, you have to imagine that there likely was a discount baked in here because of the fact that the travel industry had been hit so hard by the coronavirus pandemic. We saw consumer rewards programs for American Express and for Visa, for example, really getting hit in previous quarterly results. So you have to imagine that they likely got this at a decent discount, perhaps, and are going to be able to build this up and have some synergies here with their own consumer banking division.
Ooh, Emily, this is a time to load up on fintech because you don't want some runaway situation like we've seen in China. We'll talk about that in a second. But this isn't the first fintech play that JPM has made over the past few years. And it makes sense as the industry is getting disrupted. It's no coincidence that blockchain and Bitcoin is all the rage now because these institutions, many of which, including JP Morgan, had to do an about face on. They got to get long this stuff if they want to be able to serve their clients with these assets. But thinking about the over the rainbow trade, guess what investors might want to be loading up on now or maybe next year? Might be a little bit early. We'll have to see. But that is those movie stocks. You look at Price Action and IMAX, that was up 4%. Cinemark was up as much as 7 or 8%. Very volatile stock, very small. Not saying anybody should buy it, but we had Wonder Woman 24 released over the weekend in theaters and also on streaming platforms. And it says a lot about the current appetite for entertainment. And I guess the numbers were a bit better than feared in the box office. B. Riley Securities thinks that the industry will recover by 2022. That's a long ways off. But also, you know, you look at the streaming platforms, AT&T's HBO Max added something like 550,000 subs over the weekend. Disney Plus knocked it out of the park. They added 2.3 million. So lots of thirst for entertainment here. How is it getting served? I think the streamers are still the big play, but Disney is firing on a few more cylinders. And no coincidence, I think that stock closed at a record high yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I'm starting to kind of run out of things to see. I think all people feel that way. And I just saw that yesterday Netflix released its top shows of 2020. And you know what number one was? Tiger King. Remember that? Seems like 5 years ago.
I could forget that.
I could forget it too. I was never that big of a fan. I get why people wanted to watch it. It was a train wreck, right? But you know, there's only so much new stuff going around. Interesting. So that's the thing too. We need film production and TV show production to come back online. That's very important as well. So you mentioned Jared, fintech in China, and that's a big story also right now because the Chinese government continues to crack down upon the head of Jack Ma. And Jack Ma's little enterprise, Alibaba, and its little enterprise, Ant Financial. And Ant Financial's little enterprise, Alipay. Of course, none of these things are little. They're all huge. These are giant, giant, giant companies. And basically, what's going on here, it's not that complicated. I mean, these enterprises are getting too big for their britches. And this is a command and control economy. And also, you know, to be fair to the Chinese, I mean, they've made the case that in terms of Alipay and Ant, that they were originating a lot of loans that they weren't taking the risk on. They were just getting the fees, and the risk was building up in regional banks. So there's some real financial concerns here that I think the Chinese can legitimately point to. Having said that, you know, if you look at companies like HNA, which was an airline that got too big for its britches, and then Anbang, which was an insurance company that got too big for its britches. You see a theme here, right? Which is no company is bigger than then China, then the Chinese government, then the Chinese Communist Party, then the Chinese leadership. And that's their system. That's fair. In our country, you know, companies can get pretty big. What's good for GM is good for America. So interesting stuff here. And I think, though, there are a lot of implications for markets and American investors as well, Jared, right?
Yeah, there definitely are. And I'm seeing a lot of parallels between the current situation and maybe what we saw in 2006 and 2007 in the U.S. in the run-up to the global financial crisis. And here are the parallels, is that leverage is just getting too high. So in the U.S., we had the shadow banking system, which facilitated all these mortgage-backed securities and higher housing prices. That became its own bubble and eventually collapsed. Here, the Chinese authorities are trying to get us ahead of a situation where too much leverage is being built up in these new fintech and e-commerce platforms that do basically everything and have just become, as you said, Andy, too big for their britches, possibly. This is probably a very good thing. I don't know about how they're going, if they're going about it the best way. Arguably, this should have been done sooner. And, you know, they had to scratch that $35 billion and financial IPO. So no, these are no small potatoes. I do think it is one of my biggest, let's call it a black swan event for early 2021. And that is simply that these names dominate the EM space. You look at any EM ETF that's broadly based, it's all Asian tech. And a lot of it's e-commerce, fintech, the lot. And so if this space really fails, and Alibaba is off $250 billion in market cap from its high, and it still has over 60 buy ratings, one of the most heavily analyzed stock on the street, no sells that I believe, unless something happened relatively recently, that is probably going to change. And then when that re-rating cycle occurs, we'll have to see what happens with the rest of the space.
Definitely, Jared. And I think that angle of focusing on what this might mean for US investors in Alibaba, in JD.com, or in other Chinese-based companies really is the key component to be watching here, because you know you have China, which may be the only major economy to actually have positive GDP growth in 2020. It came out of the pandemic first, essentially, since it had been the first hit. But now you have the Chinese government actually cracking down on one of the companies that is growing the fastest here and really has these incredible growth opportunities as well, not just in its core e-commerce business, which is also what this antitrust probe is focusing on, but also in the cloud space. And you think about Ant Group, of course. I mean, this is a company that has 1 billion global users, processed some $18 trillion in mainland China alone in its fiscal year to the end of June. And at this point, it looks like the Chinese government and the PBOC may actually be curbing that company's ability to build out some of these other newer and more lucrative businesses. So it also begs the question of if this company is eventually able to go public in Shanghai and Hong Kong as it had intended to earlier this year, what does that growth profile actually look like under increased regulatory scrutiny? And it seems like it would be a lot less appealing of an investment than one with a little bit more free rein.
Yeah, and this has always been this tiptoe act that Chinese companies have had to do, and especially increasingly as it's become more Western facing and more open, the markets. And Jack Ma, of course, is the poster child of that. And as I said, we don't have that same kind of balance in the United States at all. But in China, it's toe the line, you know? And, you know, we made fun of that a lot. Oh, that's not a free market. They don't really know how to do things. Well, we let companies do whatever they want here. And I'm talking about like the FANGs in particular. Let's talk about the social networks in particular. And look where that got us. I'm not suggesting we should do what China does, but it kind of puts things in a different perspective when you think about that a little bit. And, you know, the other thing here is that Xi Jinping is not running the economy for global macro Morgan Stanley investors. He's running it for his own country's good. And that's a different perspective, again. And U.S. and international investors need to understand that. So much more to come. And it's a fascinating story with Jack Ma, too, who's someone I've spent a bunch of time with, who's a really very singular human being and is in kind of a tough spot. So there's that. There's the over the rainbow trade we talked about. with cruise lines and theaters and this JP Morgan deal. And then the market that never stops ticking. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Jared Blickery and Emily McCormick. Have a great day.